Welcome, everyone, to Transformation Talks. The intention of our podcast is to provide tips, strategies, and inspiration to transform workplaces, communities, and lives. I'm Sharon Wilson. I'm the co-founder and chief mindset and growth officer at Transforming Culture Consultants. And I have with me today our other co-founder, Cindy LaCombe, who is our chief impact and inclusion officer. In our last podcast, we talked about bystander advocacy and intervention strategies, and also how tough it can be to step up sometimes. This may be for safety reasons, but as Cindy mentioned, another prohibition might be an anti-snitch culture, where telling on someone is frowned upon, and so-called tattletales are often condemned and critiqued.
Exactly. You and I have talked about this at some length, Sharon, and I just want to reiterate here that we get it. There are a lot of reasons we don't want to snitch, and there are actual prices that we may pay for doing so. But remaining silent has impacts too, and silence can really support harassment and also toxic meanness. Even more than that, though, an anti-snitch culture can actually foster a culture of workplace violence. I think that most of us practice a kind of magical thinking, imagining that it would never happen where we work. You know, it's an out there kind of a problem, right? But the data says otherwise. Workplace violence, which is any act or threat of physical violence, harassment, intimidation, or other threatening disruptive behavior that occurs at the worksite, this kind of violence is increasingly common, and that's more true in some professions like healthcare and the service industry than for others. But probably all of us are at some risk. And while some kinds of workplace violence have in fact diminished in the last 5 years, non-fatal workplace violence actually increased between 2015 and 2019. And some predict that as more and more workers are compelled to return to the workplace, that number may actually increase. So I think this is all fairly unnerving, but we know that ignoring it isn't going to make the problem go.
Right. So one question perhaps becomes this: how do we address workplace violence when we're taught from childhood that tattling is bad? You know, I was telling you, Cindy, about a situation I had when I was in corporate America as an employee. And I was actually just right out of undergraduate school in college. And I was hired to be a sales rep for a large manufacturing company. And one of my responsibilities, the primary responsibility, was to go into restaurants and to have them buy truckloads of our product. So that was really the job. And early on in my training, I find out from my sales manager and the other sales rep that all happened to be male, but found out that one of the things that they were doing was to actually write off checks to the owners of the restaurants for damaged product. Now, this was a normal kind of thing where something gets damaged on a truck, and then the sales rep would go in and say, oh, okay, well, that was damaged. We will write you a check. And we actually had physical checks from our company back then that we were able to write on them. But what was happening, Cindy, was that they were actually writing checks for product that wasn't damaged. And it was unbelievable to me that this was something that was normalized and where these restaurant owners actually started to expect that. And me, young, coming into a new territory, I couldn't believe it that, first of all, people were doing that. They were stealing from the company and all of those things that were happening. And I really refused to do it. But there was really no way, as I think about it now, that I could have. It was so ingrained in the culture. There was no way I could have done anything. So what I chose to do was I got a promotion pretty quickly, and I was promoted out of that department into marketing. And then as a manager, one of the opportunities I had when we were interfacing with the sales department was to say something about maybe we should look at how much we're spending in damaged product. And that actually was kind of something that got the ball rolling. And that practice ultimately was eliminated because it became clear that there were hundreds of thousands of dollars over years that was being written off. And soon the salespeople's checks were taken away. So That was one example of a way, I guess, that I kind of roundabout sort of impacted, but there's no way I could have done anything. And as you pointed out before, culture is a set of values, beliefs, and behaviors that we learn as kids from our families, our communities, our friends, and our neighbors. Over time, those values and beliefs, behaviors, they're normalized, just like I talked about. That was a normalized behavior right from my manager, probably from his manager. And they come to seem natural, just the way things are. And this is true of anti-snitch culture. If you look at parenting advice, for instance, you can find article after article that counsels parents about how to deal with a child who tattles, and a majority of the advice focuses on teaching your kid not to tattle. And that position continues into their teens, continues on into college, continues on into work. When I look online, I find far too many advice sources for youth that repeat the same message. Don't be a snitch. Oh, isn't there another phrase, Cindy? Snitches get stitches.
Yes.
I saw that one a movie. But how can we practice bystander advocacy if we aren't willing to intervene when something wrong is going on? Cindy, do you want to talk about an example from your years at the university?
Yeah, I'm actually fascinated by this anti-snitch culture. Mm. And I used to talk about it in my classrooms. I would ask my students, given this scenario, say that you have to get a good grade in this class, and you know that admission into a really good graduate program, for instance, job, depends upon your earning a good grade in this class. You find out that there's a small group of students, say three people, who have stolen the answers for the final exam. They're not sharing them with you or anyone else. Knowing this, knowing that it might affect the grading curve, you take your test, the curve is changed because they've cheated, and you end up earning a B in the class. And this, in fact, can damage your likelihood of being accepted to this grad program that you wanted or this job that you wanted. I asked them, if you knew who had stolen the test responses, would you report it? Almost unanimously, they said, no. I said, even if it damaged your opportunities for the future, they said no. When I asked them why not, most of them said they didn't want others to find out that they had been a snitch. But when I asked the same students, okay, different scenario. What if we could guarantee your anonymity? Would that make a difference? Very few changed their minds. And I had more than one student regularly would say this to me. I still wouldn't tell on them because it just wouldn't be ethical. So what struck me about this last response is that it leaves out how unethical it is for this small group of three students to steal answers in the first place, right? Thereby changing the grading curve and negatively impacting everyone else in the class. But for a host of reasons, that behavior is more tolerated than telling on the cheaters. It actually reminds me of something we touched on in an earlier podcast when we talked about calling in versus calling out. And the reality that in almost every workshop I facilitated on this, someone has said something like this. Well, I don't want to call out someone because I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable or embarrassed. And this is true, even if the person that has not been called out has said something that was really egregious or harmful. And what I think is, my God, we're going to spare the person who has said something awful. We're going to spare their emotions at the cost of damage done to others in our circle, in our workplace. So I say this to recognize that it's a very complex dynamic. And when we kind of break apart an anti-snitch culture, we really do want to be cognizant of all of these different pieces, because it's not as simple as saying simply, you should report them.
Well, absolutely. I mean, to extend that a bit in terms of the dynamics, I want to just add that when we look at the data, one thing that strikes us are gendered differences. Men and women experience different worlds in terms of how we're perceived, the biases we navigate, and the expectations that we negotiate. That actually something we'll talk about in our next podcast. And I mentioned, Cindy, actually in that example I gave, I was the only woman, I remember telling you, I was the only woman in that whole division. And so not only did I have men, older men, and I was young, just out of college, but also that particular division was in an area where people are very tough. You know, I'm not saying there were mafia ties or things in our company, but those people that I worked with had grown up in tough situations. So there were some really interesting dynamics going on. But for now, we just want to briefly talk about some of the data on gender differences of workplace violence. Women are statistically more likely to be victims of workplace violence, but men are more likely to die of fatal injuries, statistically. According to recent data, 71% of victims were female, but 82% of fatal workplace violence victims were men. Women face higher risk of sexual violence and stalking, for instance, while men face higher risk of physical assault. And this kind of data might make a difference when we think about workplace policies on violence, reporting procedures, and advocacy.
I'm so glad you made that point, Jaren, and I'm really glad that you drew attention to the reality that workplace violence is not culturally neutral. But we don't have time today to discuss this in this podcast. We do want to recognize that vulnerability to workplace violence is variable. For instance, when we think about systemic discrimination, we know that disabled workers, workers of color, workers for whom English is not a first language, and LGBTQAI plus workers, they might face particular vulnerabilities too, and risks of workplace violence. And if we don't acknowledge this and center it in our efforts to stop workplace violence, we are simply not doing enough. For that reason, this is something that TCC addresses in our workshops, because you can't address the problem without naming all aspects of it. And we want to recognize there's no guaranteed way to stop workplace violence, but there are some action steps we can take to create a workplace culture where employees feel valued, respected, and safe. One is to believe in yourself and to believe others if you think that you've experienced or witnessed violence. Another is to know your company's policies on workplace violence and on reporting violence. Are there policies on non-retaliation if you do file a report? You're not sure, or if this generally workplace violence seems to be falling under the radar, ask about a company training or ask for a series of regular trainings. Because though violence in the workplace is more common than we want it to be, there are ways to proactively respond. Becoming more aware of both the barriers to reporting workplace violence and also action steps that we can take to challenge those barriers in order to be better allies and advocates, it's just a critically important first step. And we're glad you're here with us today to share that.
Cindy, thank you for that. It's important for HR professionals, for executive directors, for managers to really understand and become more aware of this, because it really is something that can so significantly impact workplace culture. And it's our intention to be a support and resource for you to help navigate these unprecedented challenges in our workplace cultures and create thriving cultures that have a ripple effect that impact us all in positive ways. We'd love for you to join our community of HR professionals, executive directors, and managers that are wanting to create and grow more empowered workplaces and organizations. And you can get free tips and resources and opportunities to attend free virtual gatherings where you can engage with industry leaders and innovators, exchange ideas and strategies and best practices. Just go to transformingcultureconsultants.com/HR. We're also available to provide you with a free virtual consultation to explore any challenges or opportunities in your workplace culture. You can apply for that at transformingcultureconsultants.com/free application. You can connect with us on LinkedIn at Transforming Culture Consultants. And our vision is a world where employees feel happy, respected, valued, and safe. Thank you for being a part of this vision.
And we hope you'll join us for our next podcast. Thank you.